This is Ryan Dedman, Outreach Director with the 911 Training Institute, providing unique mental health expertise and call mastery for dispatchers as the very first responders. You can find the 911 Training Institute on Facebook and Twitter, and visit our website, www.911training.net.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good afternoon. This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 169 of Within the Trenches. This episode is sponsored by the 911 Training Institute, unique mental health expertise for the very first responder. It is also supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. So last episode 168, I had Chris out of Kentucky on, and we talked about his 911 story as well as what we were doing that week in Orlando for the Standards and Best Practices Conference that Nina puts on every year. There were a lot of great sessions that that were going on during that time. And one of those sessions we're going to focus on here towards the middle of the episode, and it's about social media disasters and the PSAP. As technology goes on, you know, there's a lot of different ways that people are getting a hold of 911, and social media is one of those, especially during natural disaster. So we'll get to that part here coming up. I just wanted to mention some upcoming talks and show appearances. I'll be heading out to 911 Goes to Washington with the company that I work for, InDigital. We're going to be there. There's also going to be, they're going to be marking the 50th anniversary. I believe it's February 16th, 1968 was the very first 911 call made in Haleyville, Alabama. So again, this year marks the 50th anniversary, and they're going to be doing something special during that time. So that should be a lot of fun. I'm going to be the keynote speaker at the Missouri conference coming up, and I believe that's March 4th through the 7th. Again, if you're headed out there, make sure to stop by and say hello. I'm going to be doing the podcast there. I'm also going to be doing a session, a live audience Imagine Listening episode, as well as open mic. So the first 30 minutes will be Imagine Listening, where dispatchers will either say out loud their I'm 911 stories, or you'll be able to write them down and hand them up to me, and I will read them for you out loud. And then the last 30 minutes of that, so that it doesn't end on a downer, of course, will be 30 minutes of Within the Trenches presents Open Mic, where we talk about all of our funny 911 stories, whether it be just stuff that happened in the dispatch center or phone calls that have come in, people that we've talked to, funny calls, and especially the open mic situations. If you've ever worked in 911 dispatch, you know that shit happens where you have an open mic and you say something that you probably shouldn't have, but it's hilarious. So that's what we're going to be doing there. I'm also going to be the closing speaker at the Iowa APCO conference. I'm going to be recording some episodes there as well. And then Indiana NINA APCO conference will be coming up. I'll be doing the podcast as well as a live audience episode. And then we've got the Navigator conference that's coming up. That'll be in Vegas. So I will be out there. There will be the IAED is sponsoring me to come back out and do some episodes there. It was an excellent time. I thank them very much for the opportunity. And then we've got Michigan NINA APCO that'll be coming up for the first time. They're going to be, well, actually, I'm not sure if they've ever done a joint conference before, but this is going to be a joint conference, Michigan NINA APCO, this year for 2018, and it's going to be on Mackinac Island. So that's going to be badass. So there's a lot of other stuff that's coming up. Also, we're still taking sponsorships. Like I said, in the beginning of this, for this month, the month of January, the 911 Training Institute is sponsoring, looking for February, March, and throughout the year. So if you would like to be a sponsor, you can email us, and that's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. Now that we have all of that out of the way, my guest today is someone who, like she said, actually, right before we started recording, for 169 episodes, we've been saying that we were going to record one, and we're finally getting a chance to do this. I'm very excited because every time I see her, especially when it's her and I and Big Mac, who, you know, he lost some weight, so now he's just a double cheese. he would appreciate that because I told him that face to face, actually on an episode, probably I said that, and he loved it. It was funny as hell. But anyway, when the three of us are together, it is always a good time. So my guest today is Leah, and she is the deputy director with Grand Traverse 911 out of Michigan. How's it going?
It is awesome. Thank you for having me. I'm excited we're finally able to do this because you're right. It has been a long time coming.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, every time we've been at Michiganina or at any other conference that we've seen each other, it's like, damn it, we got to do this. Why don't we do this? Why don't we do this? And then something happens or we're at a baseball game and you're dancing and I'm taking video, you know.
That may or may not have happened.
Yeah, it probably didn't happen. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. Maybe it was Rob. Maybe it was the double cheese that was dancing all over the place.
It was Rob. Totally.
Yeah, looking like Mayor McCheese with his... with his suit now that he's the president of Nina. Oh, he's going to be pissed when he hears this, but it'll be funny. you know, out of all the times that we've talked and everything, I don't think that we've ever really talked about how you got into dispatching. Everyone seems to have, you know, a certain story, or sometimes people just fell into it. Or what I've been hearing lately is, I needed a job and then found out that, you know, it turned into a calling. So how did you get into dispatching?
Yeah, I was never one of those kids that was like, oh, I'm going to be an astronaut. I'm going to be a doctor. I had no clue growing up. Like, I played a lot of sports, was really loud. I had one person tell me I should probably go into like acting or something just because I wouldn't need a microphone to be on stage. So trying to be nice, but, I went away to college. I went out west. I went to the University of Nevada, Las Vegas on a track and field scholarship because I could throw heavy things pretty well.
Very nice.
Still didn't know what I wanted to do. So it was the whole general studies thing. And Las Vegas is a tough place to make it when you come from a little pond like Traverse City, Michigan, where I'm from. So it was a bit much. I ended up coming home after a year or two and still didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. Started hanging out with some people that were kind of in the law enforcement industry. And one of their parents said, oh, you probably make a good cop. We need stronger females out there to be a police presence. I'm like, oh, that might be okay. So I did some ride-alongs, thought it was okay. Went through the police academy, made it. Got a job with the U.S. Border Patrol, oddly enough. Didn't really end up going to any sort of training before I decided that probably wasn't for me. I had been dating my now husband, but at the time boyfriend, and he got a job with Grand Traverse County, where we're originally from. And about a year and a half in, he said, oh, you know, dispatch is hiring. You might like that. And he was coming home all the time with these stories of things that he would have to see or people that he would have to touch. And I learned real quick that I did not want to touch people. Nope.
Forget that. Well,
to change at the station because you smell when you come home from, I don't know what kind of call that was, but leave it at work.
Right. Why do you smell like beef?
Right. Oh God. Pretty sure there's something on your shoe. It's not normal. So, I learned real quick that I didn't really want to touch people. So I sat up in dispatch and I had done that in the police academy. And I thought that what they did was pretty cool. I mean, it was obviously a lot of multitasking, which we now know. And I thought, yeah, I could do that. So I applied 4 times at this particular agency before I got hired.
Oh man.
And I know, right? Persistence pays off, I tell you.
There you go.
And finally got in here, and that original, like, oh yeah, I can do it. Yes, I ended up being successful, but it's the hardest job. There's nothing you can do. You know, there's nothing you can do to prepare for it. So it was about a year and a half of like, holy hell, what did I get myself into? Jesus. So
so then what was it like for you? I mean, what you just said now kind of explains what it was like for you. But you go in there, you've got 4 different times that you've gone in to try to get this job. And then you finally get it on the 4th try and you step in. And I mean, what did you start learning first? What was your training like?
Luckily, they have a really good training program here. It's always been pretty detailed and broken up really, really well so that it's not incredibly overwhelming, but it's still overwhelming and you're expected to know a lot of stuff. So initially you start out with geography, and I had a hand up on that just because I'm from the area. So that was good. But geography, you know, the different departments that we dispatch, the different stations, the different police departments, the policies and procedures of things, the software that we use, learning all that first, and then non-emergent calls, and then emergent calls, and then going on from there, learning the radio. They break up the radio with fire EMS as a phase, and then police as a phase after that. And it was just, it's one of the only jobs out there where you're literally learning something new every day, almost your entire career. You can't possibly expect to learn it all in that training phase, but you have to have a good enough foundation to where when the phone rings, I can handle anything that comes across that line because of what I've learned some other day.
Right.
So it's just, you know, one of the most unique jobs out there. And I'm super proud that I worked the floor for as long as I did.
So how many screens were you looking at? And when you sat down for that first time to really dig in the beginning, what was that like for you? Was it overwhelming?
Yeah. I think we had six in the beginning we went to like bigger 30-inch monitors. It was kind of a goofy setup in the beginning, but as technology has progressed, it's gotten better, but it's like six screens, and I'm pretty sure I went permanently cross-eyed for at least a month and a half, just trying to figure it all out. But you do, and things start to make sense, and you start to get efficient and good at it. So it was overwhelming. And then there's always that like, oh, please don't mess up. Please don't mess up. It's not like working at a pizza place where you can remake a pizza, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. If somebody is coming in and then needs CPR, it's kind of, right. You can't really redo it. It's like, okay, hold on. Can we go back really quick? Can you call me right back and we start this again?
Is there a mulligan for CPR?
Right. Oh, yeah. It doesn't work that way. So with those six screens that you had, I'm trying to picture it in my head. How many mice and keyboards did you have then? Was it just, what did you,
three.
What was it?
Three. One for the radio, one for the phone, one for CAD and all the other stuff that's up there. So three. And I used both hands. So I always would have two going at the same time, usually the radio and CAD. And then if I was on the phone, it'd be phone and CAD.
Jeez. So if public safety were a band, you would be the drummer then. You're keeping the beat to the entire,
the entire thing. I'm certainly not the singer because I can't carry a tune in a bucket. But yeah, drummer's good.
I mean, that's definitely a good way to think about it. I mean, you've got all of these monitors, you're multitasking like crazy. You probably have a couple pedals and the dispatcher is the the drummer of the band of the drummer of public safety.
I like it.
That's good. I'm gonna have to make a shirt.
I'm with the band.
Yeah, exactly. So you start, going on your own, you've gone through training and everything, you've gone through that last phase. And then do you remember what it was like that first either day or night, whatever shift you were on when you weren't in training anymore? You were like officially full time.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to a kind of like a swing 5 p.m. to 3 a.m. We were on 10-hour shifts then. And it was like,
oh, that sounds weird.
Like, oh, shit. Like, it's just me now. Like, I know I can ask people for help. Didn't really need to. But no, I think one of the first 911 calls I ever took was a BOL for it was an assault in progress, but the people took off. So they had me put out the BOL for this guy with a baseball bat who was beating on cars in a neighborhood. It was interesting, but I just remember thinking like, please don't mess this up. Please don't mess this up. Please don't mess this up.
Oh man. Yeah. Those first ones that come in are the ones that, not completely define you, but depending on how you perform through those first calls, you know, you learned from those for sure.
Absolutely.
So a lot of my first calls that I took over in Allegan, it's funny that you say a BOL, because one of the first ones that I took was on we did 12-hour shifts. It was on midnight shift is what I meant. And I had switched from phones to radio during that time because I don't remember what had happened, but I ended up switching over to radios and they had put in this BOL for a guy who was drunk and he was going from house to house and he was shitting in the driveway, in each driveway. And they put it in that way. And I remember my coworker ended up yelling over and she says, "You better say that over the radio the way I put it in there." And I was reading it and I started laughing and I said, I just got off a training and I'm just new. And they said, "And that's why, because it'll be fine, that you won't get in trouble." And I said, no, I can't. I like this job too much and I need this job. So instead of saying it that way, I said, what was it? It was like Elegant Central for East Side units in such and such area. BOL for a drunk male subject who is defecating on in driveways. And someone keyed up afterwards and said some to the effect of, "Well, that's a lot of defecation," or "That's a lot of poop," or something like that. And it started busting up laughing. But everybody in the room was saying, "Ah, boo, you should have said it the other way." I was like, "Nah, man, no way."
I do miss that, like trying to find creative ways to say things that are difficult situations. Like we have that, you know, like we have the huge cherry festival here and there's 500,000 people come to town and it's just literally this free for all. I think people forget that there are actually rules and laws. The whole come on vacation, leave on probation thing is so true here. So we get calls all the time for people having sex in public.
But oh man.
We don't want to say that. So like through an entire summer, you know, Central for City units respond to this area for two people doing the grown up. Things like
that. Doing the grown up.
And then they'll key up on the radio and be like, "I'm sorry, Central, what is that?" Well, you know.
Yeah, see,
to say the funny things. They're like, just, you know, doing the grown up.
I got to remember that. Yeah. That's
I use it all the time.
It's like, you know, the officers used to say code brown, you know, when they would say that they were going to go use the restroom. And there was another one that we used. It was.
Yeah, for us, that's a 10-1000.
Oh, a 10-1000. See, and we would say 10-1 for number one and then 10-2 for going number two. And
then I like it. That's
I think cool. It was also like make smelly. Gonna make smelly.
Yeah.
And so really quick, you know, you were talking about how you miss trying to find different ways. How long has it been since you've been on the floor? Because you're the deputy director now. So do you still go out every now and then, or are you just straight up in your office?
I just went out and worked the floor last week. You know, shorthanded shift, just like every dispatch center anymore has, because it's so hard finding help. But
right.
I went out there just to kind of help. They were having a busier day. And the first phone that I picked up was a very sweet older lady who was so concerned for two foxes that were doing the grown up out in her yard. She thought that they were stuck together. You gotta be kidding. Like, I'm like, first phone call. I'm a shit magnet. Like
that's right.
The common denominator. It's well known when I get on the radio, my Facebook and CAD chat, like blow up, go home, go back to your office. Nobody wants you here. And then it kind of levels out, but legit first call I picked up, like, you gotta be kidding me.
What are the odds?
Right. Like she knew I sat down. Now I should call now.
I'm going to call right now. These freaking animals are doing the grown up.
In my front yard. And she was concerned. She said, they've been going at it for quite some time. I think they might be stuck together.
Oh, geez. So then from there, I mean, taking a call like that, and especially for those, you know, out of the public who are listening to this episode, what do you say? You know, what do you do? Because I know in my county, if there was something like that going on, it's, well, you know, we can't really send animal control out there. They're not going to do anything. Just let them do what they're doing and they'll run off.
Let them finish, ma'am. No, you know, animal control up here only deals with dogs when we do have animal control on. So I just kindly told her that if I had a conservation officer working, I would gladly pass it on to them. And that was it. And she was happy with that, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah. And you know, that's the best thing to do. I mean, when people call with stuff like that, is as dumb as it sounds, when you're just completely honest with somebody and say what you can and cannot do, people are fine with it.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah.
I mean, you'd be surprised at the people who are fine with it, except for those when they call in and they're just completely trashed out of their mind. There's no way that you can get through to them.
No, you're not reasoning with those people. Absolutely not.
No, not at all. And I know I've said the story many times with the guy who called in who was drunk and kept calling me dispatcher and stuff. I had to send a trooper out there and he ended up getting arrested for that. But there was no way to get through until I finally said, okay, fine. I'm going to send an officer out there to give you your breathalyzer test. Because he wanted to prove that he wasn't as drunk as the bar said he was, and they kicked him out.
Oh, good Lord.
Right. But then he also actually, he drove from the southernmost part of the county to where he lived, which is the northernmost part of the county. And I asked him, sir, how did you get home? Did you drive home? Well, that's not the point here. The point is I spent a lot of money there and they kicked me out. And I said, okay.
Yeah, that wasn't smart.
Nope, not at all. So that part is always fun. You know, you get that smile on your face like the Grinch. You're like, all right, yes. I gotcha.
That's true.
So out of all the calls you've taken when you were on the floor still, and even when you head back out there, what is one of the calls that has stuck with you?
Oh, man. I have quite a few. If you're going on the bad call route, it's there's a fire one that sticks with me just because it was a fire in a residence, and I had the male half on the line, and he was getting everybody out. They had an older female that was a roommate that, come to find out, had actually started the fire. Smoking next to her oxygen tank.
Oh, geez.
And he went back in to get her, and he didn't make it back out. And he kept me on the phone with him, and so I heard all that. That one sticks with me. We had a homicide suicide right in downtown. That one, and then some of the kid calls usually stick with you as well.
Right, because so. I mean, you have a child yourself, so those calls, you know, kind of they they are close to home even more when you have a kid. I mean, I had a son before when I very first started dispatching back in Florida. But I think about it now, even if I didn't have any kids at the time, it would still affect me because, you know, that innocent child and stuff, you know, they can't help themselves usually. So those are the hardest ones. But when you have kids and you take those calls, damn, those really hit home.
They do big time. Yeah. There was a child abuse one too, where somebody finally went in there because the kids weren't showing up to school. And when they went to the house, I mean, they were so malnourished and just not in good shape. I think the 12-year-old weighed the same as my 4-year-old. It was awful. And that, well, I'll remember that one too. So there's those, but then you take some of the other ones, like Fox is doing the grown up, or the gentleman that called one night because he was a truck driver and had answered an ad for some companionship. And when he showed up at the hotel room, he had paid $300 mm-hmm. for some companionship while he was passing through town. And when he got to the hotel room, he called 911 because he wanted his money back. He didn't realize he was paying by the pound.
Oh,
me.
Oh no. Oh, so man.
You take the good with the bad.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. when there's a lot of shit that happens on no matter what shift it is, whether it be day or night, there's always a few calls in there in the mix that make you think WTF, and it just, you know, it doesn't wash it away completely, but it definitely helps.
Oh, for sure. If it was so bad all the time, it'd be, I mean, it's already hard enough to take some of the stuff that they do or that, you know, we used to do when we worked the floor, but the funny definitely helps. I preferred the midnight shift as well.
Yeah.
I didn't like days.
Yeah. Days seem to drag on. There's way too many admin calls that would come in as well as, you know, a lot of alarms and such. I don't know why the alarms would happen a lot during the daytime.
People awake.
Right. Awake. Yeah, exactly. But then, you know, I would get in at about 4:30 in the afternoon to work my 4:30 to 4:30. And at shift change, no matter what was going on, it was always hell. And, you know, people are getting out of work. And I remember people would ask me, you know, why do you think it gets that busy around that time. And I said, I don't know, man, maybe because people are at work, they've got all this pent up rage and stuff. And then they get out and they think, I'm going to start some shit.
Right. Get me out of here.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I it's almost like a full moon during that time when all that crap ends up coming in. But it makes for the shift to go a lot faster, especially because being in Michigan and anywhere else that it snows a lot, you know, when I was on night shift, there would be hours where there was nothing going on. So it would give me time to either do homework or I would watch a movie or something. And but then, you know, something would come in out of nowhere and it would be balls to the wall busy again. So like you said, it's you take the good and the bad.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Winter storms are nothing to mess around with. They'll fill up your whole shift. You don't even know what happened.
It, the Facts of Life theme song popped in my head right when I said that. I almost started singing it.
You should have.
I know, right? So now that we know a little more about you and stuff, we're going to talk about social media because social media is something that you've been doing at your PSAP. But before we get to how you've done everything there at your dispatch center, I want to go to last week, which was Orlando, and it was the SBP conference or Standards and Best Practices that Nina puts on every year. And one of the sessions that was there was actually one of the sessions that I was involved in, and it was called Social Media Disasters and the PSAP. And it was interesting to hear some of the stories that were coming out. Those that were on the panel were, like I said, myself, and then Chris Carver with Nina, John Chiaramonte with Mission Critical Partners, and then Sonia Lopez Clausen. She's the PIO with GHC, or the Public Information Officer with the Greater Harris County out of Texas. And Sonia was talking about all of the stuff that was going on during Hurricane Harvey and some of the stuff they went through. One of the things I want to do first is play this video. I've got two articles here to reference that that she had talked about. One is from the HuffPost and the other is from PoliceOne.com. This first one is called How We Could Better Leverage Social Media During Disasters Like Harvey. Now, this video is just music. It's got text in it, but I'm going to read it as the narrator. And I'll make sure to post it up as well. So here we go. So it's called Hurricane Harvey's Social Media Saviors. In Texas, authorities have mounted dramatic rescues. But emergency services are struggling to keep up. In some areas, 911 couldn't keep up with the calls for help. Some dispatchers had to call back people who left messages. So victims are taking to social media for help. So I'm going to stop this here really quick. This video is about 2 minutes long. We're in about 40 seconds. And the reason I'm stopping this really quick is because they end up showing some tweets that came through. And I just want to make sure to read it all the way through until before it gets to the next one and then I miss it. So one of them that came in here, it says, my mom is stuck in Songwood. Also, there are some like names and addresses that are blurred out. So, you know, I won't be able to say that part. I'll just say blank. But it says, and my mom, elderly and disabled, and have my nephew. And they ended up tagging or mentioning Houston Fire Department Rescue, incidents, a local news station, and then just at Houston Police. And then at the end of it, it says help. The next one on here says, man stuck inside car needs help on Huffmeister Road, Cypress Rose Hill Road. And then another one here that's actually directed to the sheriff of the of Harris County. It says in caps, help, help, help. There's a lady stuck on, and then it's blanked out. And wayside stuck on the freeway. Please help. Another one that came in here, also directed to the sheriff's office or to the actual sheriff, says urgent water rescue needed now at, and then the blank, Houston, Texas with the zip code. And then at the end of it, it says cancer patient with feeding tube. Another one that came in, it says, we're at blank in Houston. Water is swallowing us up. Please try calling 911 for rescue. Please send help. Authorities were able to direct first responders or ask volunteers in the area for help. This tweet of senior citizens in an assisted living facility submerged in water went viral. So, Leah, I don't know if you remember. I remember seeing this picture. It came up. It was on Facebook and on Twitter, and it showed all of the elderly in that that home with the water all the way up. And in this tweet, it says, need help ASAP emergency services, please retweet. And that was the one that ended up going viral.
Right. I do remember seeing that.
They were all rescued per the video. One sheriff in Houston used Twitter to coordinate rescue efforts. But other agencies are asking people not to use social media. So in a statement on Facebook made by the Houston Police Department, they ended up posting up, please do not use the HPD social media accounts for rescue requests. If you have a life-threatening emergency, 911 is the best way to capture your request and make sure it is properly dispatched. With authorities struggling and floodwaters showing no sign of receding, many victims have no other choice. So that was a video there from the Huffington Post. Again, it's called How We Could Better Leverage Social Media During Disasters Like Harvey. This was written by Lydia O'Connor. I'll make sure to post this on the blog post so that everybody can see it along with the video. Everything that it shows on there, it's just crazy the kinds of stuff that went on during that time. And when Sonia was up there talking about this, she was saying that, you know, all of their 911 lines were completely taken up. You know, they were, no pun intended, they were flooded with with calls that had come in. And it was bad enough that the people who couldn't get through, they ended up calling the non-emergency lines all of their 10-digit lines, and they were leaving messages. So when they realized this, they had to go back and go through those messages to see who they could send help to, which was crazy. So I guess in that sense, the same way with social media, where some of the authorities were saying not to use social media, it's because of the reason that you can't regulate it. It's hard to keep track of all of that. Would you say that's the case there?
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to keep track of it. And also, you can't guarantee that any sort of social media in any one center is going to be monitored 24/7. And I think that that's what most centers have trouble filling the seats that they need to fill to answer phones. To find somebody to just monitor social media, that's tough.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that they brought up during that time, during that session rather, is as technology is moving forward and as fast as it is going, with disasters that happen like this, you know, you've got Facebook where just a few days ago the earthquake hit in Alaska, and a friend of mine who lives there, she checked in saying that she was okay. So, you know, you've got stuff like that. On Facebook, they also have a way now that they have some artificial intelligence or AI that can detect when people are live and whether or not they're suicidal. So in the dispatch center, how is that? I mean, do you think that it's going to come to the point where we're going to have to hire more people to monitor that? Or I don't know. I guess what are your thoughts?
Honestly, probably. I mean, the more that public safety agencies come online with social media and even text messaging, you know, anymore, it's an expected service. And eventually it will probably get to the point where they're trying to get directly to the PSAP or to the sheriff's office or police department or whatever assistance they may need. And so, yeah, I think probably that's the direction things are heading.
Yeah. And on top of that, there's also applications that are assisting people with getting, another way to get a hold of emergency services. One of those apps that was brought up last week in that session, it's called Nextdoor.
Right.
And you've heard of it?
Yep. The neighborhood.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes. So I think this is the first time, or last week was the first time that I had actually heard about that. And the digital media manager for the Harris County Sheriff's Office, they ended up using this to kind of monitor and put out all of their information, like road closures and everything that was going on, to their social media accounts. And one of the things they have here in this other article, and this article is from police1.com. I'll make sure to have this up on the blog post as well when I post this episode, but it's called How Social Media Assisted Cops with the Hurricane Harvey Response. And this was done by Caitlin Lee. So what they ended up putting on here was, as a whole, Houston area agencies shared over 1,200 posts and 3,000 urgent alerts and received over 10,000 replies and 55,000 thanks during the hurricane. Many departments worked together to disseminate information, often posting messages from other departments to ensure the updates were seen by as many residents as possible. So it was something that really helped out during this time.
Right.
You know, they were also able to geo-target some of the information to the right regions that was going out there. And they were, one of the other things too, this is a big part of what we were talking about last week, was false reports and actively correcting false information and rumors. They were able to use this app to do it that way. Because, you know, we see it all the time in the news where sometimes you don't know what's true and what is not. So for public safety to have their own types of social media out there to correct certain things, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree.
For you, you're pretty close to this whole topic in the sense of social media, because you started, working on the page for Facebook for your peace app, and you guys are up to what, 47,000 likes
almost
on there?
Almost 45. We're just shy of 45,000.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, yeah, you're pretty up there, and that's really good for, for a dispatch center putting out information to the community. So how did that all come about? I mean, did you guys just want to reach out more, or what was it?
Yeah, honestly, it was such a smaller scale event, but we had been pushing since about 2010. We had started asking if we could have our own Facebook page. You know, newspapers, news outlets, they have Facebook pages, or, you know, just different places have Facebook pages, and they're able to get out a lot of information really fast. I don't think people really watch the news anymore because they're on the go. So we had asked, and we kind of kept getting denied. Finally, in 2012, we had this huge weather event. We call it Snowmageddon here. It was March of 2012. we had 36 inches of snow fall in less than 11 hours. I mean, we literally were buried. I couldn't get out of my house. I was actually on maternity leave, so I didn't even have to work it. But I was stuck in my house with a newborn child. Had to snowshoe out to the end of my 600 foot long driveway just to get to a road that maybe would have been plowed so somebody could come and pick me up and take me somewhere that had like care, you know?
Whoa.
So it was a big deal. And a lot of people, there was no power. So people weren't able to watch the news. A lot of people don't have crank radios or handheld radios anymore. And so listening to radio stations wasn't happening, but they had their cell phones and they would charge them up in their vehicles and they would check Facebook. They would check social media to see what was going on, what was the news, when was the power going to be restored. They would be able to check these things. And so we took that back to our admin and said, literally no one watches the news anymore, or they can't have access to it when things like this happen. We can get a lot of information out really quickly and people will be able to check it. Can we please start this page? And we finally got the okay. So we had a great guy. His name's Corey. He works at a different PSAP now. He's doing really well for himself, but he made the page for us, set it all up. And we had made a bunch of decisions throughout the process, or our administration did at the time, of how it was going to be managed. You know, is everybody going to have access to it? Are just supervisors going to post? What are we going to post? Things like that. And once we had that all figured out, we started posting on the page. So just after Snowmageddon in March, in October, we had a major dam in our area break. And so the River Valley flooded. We have had to evacuate homes. And via social media, we were able to get alerts out to people or messages out to people that someone's coming to knock on your door. They're telling you to leave. We're evacuating this area. I mean, we could provide maps. We could provide all these things. And we slowly started to become a trusted source in the community on where to get information and what people should do, giving instructions and things like that. So I think when the dam broke, we had like 566 likes, and within 24 hours we were up to like 2,000 just because people were sharing those posts so much within our community.
Wow.
It kind of blew up from there. So that's really a little help from Mother Nature is how that all got started.
Yeah. Thank you, Snowmageddon.
Right. Thank you, Snowmageddon and damn.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that go into these posts? Cause I ask because I've seen a lot of other dispatch centers that have their own Facebook page or Twitter handle or something, and they don't have the same following that you guys do. What is in the secret sauce? I mean, I think we kind of talked about it before, and there was, and you don't have to spill all your secrets, but I'm just saying what it goes into those posts that you make. Is it humor? Is it sarcasm? What is it that, you know, really catches the eye?
Yeah, it's all of those things, honestly. And it depends on the situation. We all live here in this community. We live, work together. And if we can put a post out there that relates to a majority of the people in our community, we found that those are usually the most successful. If we are in misery together because it's a huge snowstorm, our post is probably going to come through with a bunch of sarcasm that everyone can relate to because we're all suffering through it.
Right.
Just all things like that. So humor, sarcasm, movie lyrics, and song lyrics. Let me tell you what, those go, people love that stuff.
What is one of the ones that you've done with song lyrics?
Oh my, I usually use Vanilla Ice a lot. I'm a huge Perfect. Bon Jovi fan. So Bon Jovi was up there recently. Movie lyrics is usually like Top Gun and just, you know, movies that everyone knows.
Right. Yeah.
And I like to, you know, a little Bon Jovi. We had snow and then it turned to rain and then went back to snow. So it was a whole slippery when wet reference.
Perfect.
It was pretty funny. You know, like Raise Your Hand, another song on the album, Raise Your Hand if you're going to drive safely.
See,
and people usually catch them and share them, and we deliver. We've come up with a really, I won't say it's unique, but we've come up with a really clever way to deliver bad news in a fun way. And I think that that is what carries through with our community.
Very
like,
well
yep,
done.
It might suck because of the weather, but at least this is funny. And this is how they alerted us.
Right. Yeah. And I tell people there's dark humor in every profession and situation. And that's the way to do it. I mean, there was one that you posted recently that I shared on the page as well, and it was for like construction or something, and it had Gandalf.
it was Gandalf. I know the line is "You shall not pass," but we put "Thou shall not pass," so we weren't copying it completely. But
right,
we had an oil tanker spill, and it spilled 5,000 gallons of gasoline into one of our feeder streams into a major river that goes through our town, and so we had to shut the roadway down so that, you know, all the necessary people could come in and clean it up. We had three roadblocks up, three, and people were driving around all three. And it's like, I'm not sure what part of this you didn't get, the three roadblocks that were there or the police officer just beyond it, but you cannot go that way. And
right.
So that was the thou shalt not pass. And people started to get it. So it was nice.
Oh, that's awesome. That's all it took was Gandalf the Grey and your sense of humor and sarcasm in there.
Laying the smack down, man.
Exactly. Now, go ahead.
Yeah. You know, I'll do other stuff too. Like one Super Bowl, it was the one where Katy Perry had those ridiculous sharks or whatever and was performing, but I got a 911 hang up call in the middle of halftime, and whoever butt dialed me had the worst singing voice ever. And so I made a post about, you know, if you're at a big game party and your phone's dialing 911, you might want to secure it because I can hear you singing Katy Perry right now and it's not that great. And that got shared like 180,000 people saw it. It got shared like 2,000 times. It was something ridiculous. But that was back in 2015. And we've made other posts that are kind of like awareness posts, you know, butt dials, 911 hangups, things like that. And our 911 hangup percentage is down 13% since then.
Oh, man. See, you put it out there and tell them what's up and they listen.
Yeah, like I don't want people to hear my bad singing or hear me go to the bathroom or whatever the case may be, you know, and they're locking their phones or they're at least more conscious that they will call 911 and that it's a, you know, it's an issue for us. So our call volume on that is down and that's nice.
Yeah, that's very nice. So, you know, some of the tips for social media use, some of the stuff that I used last week, especially if it's part of, you know, a specific situation or event, was to keep it short and focused on that individual situation or event. If you're using a hashtag, excuse me, to make sure to use it the right way, because you know, there's a lot of people out there that don't know that hashtags aren't just for, they're not for any random thing. And I always reference that, that skit, that Jimmy Fallon, Timberlake did, yeah, where they're hashtagging everything, you know, hashtag it's time to go to the bathroom, hashtag I want to get something to eat. You know, people are hashtagging every single thing that they're talking about, but really hashtags are supposed to be for like, kind of like aggregating so that you can get all of the information in one spot. So the example that was given last week was, and I don't know if this is a hashtag or not, but this was just a hypothetical thing was, hashtag 911 now. And what we were saying though, as well, is that if it's for a specific area and you want to, you know, if hashtag 911 now is a universal thing, but you want it to be just for Grand Traverse, you know, you would put hashtag 911 now Grand Traverse or hashtag 911 now Orlando, you know, you would add that on there so that you can, you know, see who all is using it for that area. And also one of the things were to make sure that whatever hashtag you're using for that specific situation or event, look it up first to see if somebody else is using it for something else. Because one of the things that Sonia brought up last week was that hashtag Harvey was not only connected to Hurricane Harvey, but also Hollywood Harvey, which is a, you know, a whole other disaster to itself. When you're doing it, make sure that, you know, there's nothing like that out there or add another word on it so that you can make it your own, you know, however you want to do it. What are some of the tips and tricks that you have?
In terms of like posting on your work page.
Right. Yeah. And anything like that you know, for other dispatch centers that are trying to do the same thing.
Actually, so I see this a lot. I'll see a dispatch center make a post, say it's a road closure, an accident or something, road's going to be closed down because they're doing accident investigation or whatever the case may be. And instead of updating that original post, like when the road is clear, they make a separate post. Well, people are still sharing your post that the road is closed. They're not sharing the one that's been updated that says that it's open.
Right.
And so the best thing to do when you make that original post, you stick with the original post and you edit that. You can edit any post that you make. So say the road's closed. Okay, we've posted it. Don't go that way. Cops say road's open. Go back in. Edit that original post. Say as of, and then timestamp it as of 1400 or 1600, whatever the case may be, this road is open so that as people share it and as it pops up in the feed, it's the actual updated version of that post and people won't be confused.
Excellent. No, that is definitely a good tip there.
That took us a little while to learn.
Oh yeah.
we made that mistake too.
Going into the wrap up of this episode, where do you think public safety will feel the most impact as technology continues to grow? I know we kind of talked about this in the middle of the episode, but you know, do you think it's going to hit more of those that are on the road or those in dispatch or just like all around?
I think it's going to hit all around, but I also think it's going to hit dispatch pretty hard because there's going to be the expectation that they're watching it, that that's an avenue to report emergencies or to get help. And so that first line of defense, the dispatchers that we have working that first line, there's going to be an expectation that they're checking that or looking at it. It's not going to be your sheriff's office or city police department out on the streets, you know, scrolling through their feed to see. It's going to be the dispatch center. And so I think there's going to be added responsibilities up there.
Oh man. Can you imagine?
And no, I can't. And how do you sort that out? Is it one person asking for the same thing, or did this person see that somebody else is asking for help and now they're trying to report that, and you've got, you know, seven people reporting the same emergency, but you're having a hard time filtering out? I mean, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. And I think if, as long as a good public education campaign goes out there, when Absolutely. All of this starts ramping up even more, I think it'll also help. And then during a certain situation or event, Snowmageddon, you know,
right.
We'll just reference that. If you right. had that as the hashtag, or if you put out there, whatever the post is, please use mm-hmm. this hashtag, you know, you'd be able to figure out, or maybe not regulate it completely, because I mean, it's social right. media, it'll explode, but,
sure.
It would make it a little easier to be able to do that by, using a certain hashtag so that you can follow everything that's going on there. But I agree. I think it's definitely going to be hard there in dispatch, because they're going to be the ones to get hit hard the first. They are the first responders. They're going to be the one who sees all of this. And yeah, there's going to be that expectation that dispatch is watching everything.
It's just like anything else. It adds that, well, I saw on Facebook, I saw on Twitter, I saw on Instagram that this person is asking for help. Did you see that already? And it's like, you know, people don't read comments as it is, or they're not going to know. So it's additional calls into the dispatch center. If they can get calls into the dispatch center, it's something extra that the, you know, that people are going to be looking at just to see if people need help on social media. It's a big thing.
You know, and there's also those rare stories that come out where you read something where they say, oh, you know, person was saved through a Facebook chat, or person was saved or found through, you know, social media or something. And then off of that one rare occurrence, other people are reading it. You know, that that sends a message as well as, well, if it happened this time, maybe it would happen again.
Right.
And then
that's an acceptable way to do it. I should send that message. Yeah. We don't personally have our messaging activated on Facebook because we do not have somebody dedicated to watch that 24/7. So that was a choice that we made at our dispatch center, just because we knew we weren't going to be monitoring Facebook 24/7. We don't have the messaging feature. I see other agencies that do, and I'm honestly curious as to how that works out for them. I'm sure they like getting information when they can get it, but when they can't monitor it, I would feel like there's a liability there. Well, hey, I sent you a message, you know?
Yeah,
What's the expectation there?
Yeah, the liability would be big on that. Ugh, it's going to be crazy, man.
Yeah. I know.
Well, thank you very, very much for being on. We finally got a chance to do this. We got to do this again. That was a lot of fun.
Yes, absolutely. It was my pleasure. This is great.
For those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and it's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @901podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode was sponsored by the 901 Training Institute, a unique mental health expertise for the very first responder, as well as supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. And really quickly, how can people find your social media account there on Facebook?
Search Grand Traverse, not 911. Grand Traverse 911 is what we're under on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Awesome.
That's quite the lengthy history on there. So it's good stuff, good information.
Excellent. Yeah, people can go there and check it out, especially if you're locally in that area, or if you're a dispatch center who's looking to see, you know, how to create your own page and just kind of see what Leah and everyone has been doing. Like I said, or even you said, you guys are just under 45,000 followers, and that's freaking awesome. Mm-hmm. Well done for that again.
Thanks.
Now, this episode, you should be. You should be very proud of it. I'm proud of you. for those who are listening, you can also hear this episode, as well as all the others, 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and thejabberlog.com. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, this is Ricardo, just jumping right back in here for a quick moment. This episode was very fun to record. I always love recording with Leah and conversations. always love talking with Leah. This is the first episode that we did together, and I hope to record more with her. This was very educational for everybody, whether you're in public safety or in the public. But I want to make it clear that although there are some people out there that were, you know, successful and reporting through social media, the preferred way to get a hold of 911 emergency services is to dial 911. As you heard in this episode, a lot of the cases that were successful were extreme cases, like hurricanes and such. And, you know, people were unable to get through on 911 or even through the 10-digit lines, so they went to social media. But I can tell you right now, there are not dispatchers that are sitting there monitoring social media, despite what you see in on TV or in movies or in these rare successful occurrences where it's happened in the news. Dispatchers are not monitoring. So I know that's probably something that people are expecting, but that's not what's going on right now. So again, the preferred way when you're in an emergency to get through is to dial 911 or wherever you're listening to this from, whatever the phone number is for emergencies, dial that phone number. And if text to 911 is available in your area and voice is not enough, then send a text to 911. So I just wanted to make sure, you know, to make it clear, because even though we were talking about how social media is becoming a huge part of public safety, that as of right now, it's just these rare occurrences or extreme situations that it's been happening, because there's nobody who's actually monitoring that traffic. It's going to take a lot to figure out how to even get a hold of how to regulate that and, you know, make sure that it's going through. So again, one last time, the third time, call 911 when you're in an emergency. It's the best way to make sure that your emergency is being documented and dispatched. And again, if voice is not enough and it's available in your area, text to 911. Have a good one.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.